the first year I hit 100 grand, and I would have never thought that that was even possible.
Yep.
You know, 30 grand a year was a lot of money to me. So, I mean, that really opened my eyes. Like, that was huge. I never pictured myself being a six-figure income earner. I thought you had to go to college for 100 years to do that.
Yeah.
The next year, tripled. Hit over 300 gross. And that's not 300 gross commissions. That's like 300 gross, like, what I made.
That's huge. You know? 22-year-old at that. 22, 23.
Yeah, I was 22. Going from 30 grand at the bank to 100 grand the next year, and then 300 the next year. Uh-huh. And so I'm like, all right, I should hit like half a million this year. We'll hit a million the year after that, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, things have been going real good.
Hey, everybody, what's up? This is Brady with Carrot. I'm super excited to get to announce something today. We are rolling out something called the 30-Day Challenge. Now, this is something we've never done before at Carrot, and it's going to be open to agents, investors. Each one gets their own special, unique challenge. And what we're going to be doing is, over the course of 30 days, we're going to be giving you a strategy, implementation, so building out your website, teaching you SEO, Facebook ads, a little bit of PPC. We're going to be teaching you everything you need to dial in your marketing strategy. So the way we're going to be doing this is through lessons available on the website, but also through a private Facebook group where we're going to have coaching and accountability, daily videos, and actually live weekly coaching calls. It's going to be awesome. We want to do this because we're trying to think, you know, what is the quickest, most effective and efficient way we can get people to bring in their first 15 leads in 30 days. And this is what we came up with. It's been a huge success already. So if you want to join the challenge, go to carrot.com/challenge. Just select agent or investor. We can't wait to see you there. It's going to be stinking awesome. So don't forget carrot.com/challenge. Can't wait to crush it with you these next 30 days. Have an awesome day, everyone.
Guys and gals, you're coming in on the Facebook side of things, and you're listening to it on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you are. And this is a special edition because we were just talking about it right before we hit record on this, Anthony and I, who I will introduce you guys to Anthony here in a second. This is the first in-studio podcast we've done, probably, Brady, since like you and I were in here 2-3 months ago. I'm excited about it because we've got the fancy studio in here, and I usually use either this, my cell phone, to record my podcast. You don't have to be fancy with it, or my computer in there. And Anthony actually walked in. He said, how many do you do in here? And he's the first ever Carrot customer that's had a one-on-one podcast in the studio. So welcome in, man.
Nice.
Welcome in, dude. So what we're going to do on this episode is Anthony and I connected. Shoot, this was early this spring. Yeah. We were marketing Carrot Camp, and all of a sudden we see a Carrot Camper come in from Roseburg, and anything that happens in Roseburg with our company isn't very common. But I was pumped to see a young local entrepreneur who's crushing it, really successful agent, which we're going to talk about what Anthony's doing and how he's built his agent business so fast, but also now what he's doing on the investment side of things. So Anthony Beckham, welcome on the Carrot Cast, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks, dude, for having me.
Dude, and I'm pumped. I learned a lot more about you at Carrot Camp too, where you had a chance to break down your business and business model. And guys, we're going to first of all kind of start with where Anthony is in his business, how he got his start. But first of all, I kind of want to start it there. Dude, I'm just like blatantly asking you this.
Sure.
What pushed you over the edge? Because you joined Carrot Camp before you were ever even a Carrot customer.
Yeah.
So what pushed you over the edge to join Carrot Camp and pay the not small tuition to come across town to hang out with some guys you've never met before?
Well, I was, you know, all my podcasts that I listen to, all the real estate podcasts and everything, and then I noticed that you were popping up on them you were doing different things. Yeah,
it's working, baby.
And then I'm just like, all right, well, this guy's everywhere. He's in town.
Yeah.
So I started doing some research on the company and everything. And I'm like, I need to connect. And instead of just going down there and knocking on the door, like, I'm going to commit and make it happen. So I'm glad I did.
Dude, did you have any thoughts where like, well, they can't be that legit because they're in Roseburg kind of thing?
Not necessarily. I believe in my town. I'm born and raised here, but definitely you could have some limiting beliefs about that, you know, because it's such a small town. You wouldn't think that a big software company that was servicing, you know, all the investors that I follow online and everything are like, yeah, Carrot, that's what I use. And I'm like, that's down the road. Like, I didn't go down there.
I love it, man. So that was cool. But I want to go, we're going to dive into your story now. And why don't you first tell people a little bit about yourself. How old you are, I think, is relevant here because a lot of people have limiting beliefs around age, especially when you're really old, or we hear it when you're really young, or we hear it on the older side too, where they have limiting beliefs when they're just starting in their 60s or 70s, or we even have some clients in their 80s. Where'd you grow up? What is your current business model? What's your team look like? And then your age, and then we'll kind of take it back to your story because you have a really unique story too. You weren't born into a family that was in real estate.
Sure. So born and raised here in Roseburg.
Yep.
And right now we were actually a team of four. We just went down to a team of three. So I'm going through the hiring process. Yeah. That's been a huge deal. This is my third year. So I got started in January of 2017 at the age of 21. I just turned 24 on Monday. So
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So let's kind of start at 21, man. So what made you make that leap and what were you doing before then, first of all, and what made you make the leap from what you were doing to go, man, I think I want to dive into this real estate thing?
Well, I'd always done things like that. I had bought and fixed and flipped cars. You know, I'd owned 30 plus cars before I had ever even thought about real estate. So I was always doing things like that. But the important thing was that I was working in a cubicle for a local bank and just doing customer service stuff. And I was making, you know, the same amount of money that my parents were making. And so I thought, you know, I was doing well. And it was my second year there and I got a quarter raise. Hmm. And I kind of decided, you know what, I probably would have got that quarter no matter how hard or how little I worked. Yeah. And so I really wanted to do something that was more dependent. You know, I was still doing side hustles, but I wanted to do something that was more dependent on how hard I worked rather than, you know, how long I sat in the chair. Mm-hmm. I had just bought my first house and I hated that job the whole time. I mean, as soon as I got to a year, I got my pre-approval.
Yep.
And then I wanted an investment property. So that's what got me started. So I was looking all through, you know, the investment stuff and got tied up in a short sale that took 11 months to close. So I had to grind for a whole nother year, you know, because I couldn't quit my job.
So was that house when you were planning on moving into, or was that an investment?
That was going to be my first house.
Cool. Yeah.
But I wanted to get a good deal on it. You know, I wanted to make sure that I was, you know, I was looking at cash flow and the future of it and everything. So I was having a real hard time making that work here. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so I was looking at car sales. I was looking at cell phone sales, something that would allow me to at least make a little bit more money. But I did have this house now. Mm-hmm. So I had the mortgage that I needed to pay.
Yeah.
My girlfriend at the time was like, you've been spending like 2+ hours every day studying real estate, you know, listening to all these investment podcasts and everything else. Why don't you just become a real estate agent? So I started doing a little bit of research and I was like, okay, if I sold like a handful of houses, I would make about the same that I did at the bank and I'd work for myself and be happier, you know? So that's what really made me take the dive. I had a whole extra year of savings because of that, the short sale.
Gotcha.
So I had 11 months extra savings. I'm like, all right, you know, I have a couple months before I really have to make something happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad I did.
Did you immediately quit the bank and then dive full force into the agent, or you did both at the same time?
Like as soon as I didn't have my license yet.
Gotcha.
I was like a couple weeks out from having my license at least. And it took me, this is another thing that I should say, never give up. I did not get my license until the fourth try.
Oh, really?
I missed it by one question. Three times in a row. I mean, I was like, this thing is rigged.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like one of those things. I just had to make it happen. Mm-hmm. I had the responsibility of the house now, you know? Yep. So
I kind of want to unpack a little bit now. You'd mentioned your original goal was to go, well, I can close a few transactions that'll replace my income.
Yeah.
I've got a mortgage now, have a little bit more freedom doing something I want to do. But you were studying investment stuff, it sounds like, before you went
Correct.
In. And you saw the tie of going, cool, I think the investment side of things is probably where I want to go. Mm-hmm. The real estate agent side of things is also going to get me in there. Has your plan the whole time to be doing both, or did you kind of stumble?
Well, actually, I just wanted to own investment properties.
Gotcha.
I wanted to have that passive income. And remember, that quarter raise over a year, I'm like, it's going to take me 100 years before I'll ever have enough money invested in real estate to have a passive income that could do that. So that's why I really needed something that was dependent on how hard I worked.
Cool. So what did you do right when you got the license?
Uh-huh.
And I want to give people a little preview. If you're cool, are you cool sharing some numbers?
Sure.
Cool. What did you do commission-wise the first couple of years?
The first year I hit $100,000 and I would have never thought that that was even possible.
Yep.
I mean, you know, $30,000 a year was a lot of money to
me. Yeah.
So I mean, that really opened my eyes. Like that was huge. I never pictured myself being a 6-figure income earner. I thought you had to go to college for 100 years to do that.
Yeah.
The next year I I had gone through two assistants. I was really trying to figure that out, and we just made a perfect fit, tripled, hit over 300 gross. And that's not 300 gross commissions. That's like 300 gross, like what I made.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, minus expenses or whatever, but I still tripled my income.
That's huge.
You know,
22-year-old at that, 22, 23.
Yeah, I was 22. Yeah. So that going from 30 grand at the bank to 100 grand the next year and then 300 the next year. Uh-huh. And so I'm like, all right, I should have like $500,000 this year. We'll hit $1 million the year after that, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, things have been going real good. Way better than I ever could have thought as far as that goes.
Dude, so I want to dive in and get more detailed on some of kind of how that happened and how you use the skills at the call center, moved it forward. But then also we're going to kind of transition into kind of how you came into the Carrot fold, how you're doing property investments, which we'll talk about kind of how some of that's working. But what worked the best for you that first year as an agent to get to that $100,000 a year? Because that's a big deal, dude. 21 years old, six figures right out of the gates. That doesn't happen all that often. So there's something you did that was different than everyone else.
I did everything. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. So I basically called up the top broker in the county and was kind of like, hey, can I do this? Our brokerage was an hour north. It was out of Eugene.
Okay.
So I went and interviewed with every brokerage in town, created a spreadsheet. I knew I was going to be a top producer. So which one's going to net me the most money, you know, after splits and everything. And she just happened to make that switch over there as well. Even though, you know, it wasn't local branding. It was branding from the next town over, an hour north. So anyway, I kind of followed on her coattails, asked if I could do some open houses and stuff. So every weekend I had Saturday and Sunday already slotted for open houses. So I knew I was working 7 days a week. It was already like decided. I couldn't back out of it. It was in the paper, you know, like it was happening. And then beyond that, I was calling everybody, you know, like they tell you to do, all your friends and family and whatever else. But I'm 21. You know, my parents don't even own a house, you know, like none of my friends are buying houses.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to have much luck there. So I started doing online leads with Facebook, Zillow, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And since I had nothing better to do, but I used to sit in a cubicle and make phone calls 8 hours a day. So to me, that was like, that's just what you needed to do. And so I only had 10 people in the database, then they were getting a call every day, you know? And so conversion was awesome. You know, like for instance, the Zillow rep was like, man, there's nobody on this coast that converts as many as you do.
Really?
And then I was doing the open houses every weekend. So I was getting decent because I made them sign in. They put their names in.
I gotcha.
I told them the seller wants us to sign in when we come in here, you know? And so they would sign in. I also did like a raffle drawing for a bottle of wine. So that was another way. If they didn't do that, maybe they would give me their number on there.
Yep.
And they entered in that database and they were getting a call from me every week. So conversion was just like top priority.
So on the conversion side of it, let's say you're getting those leads, you're getting the Zillow leads. Uh-huh. What are you doing to foster that relationship to convert that person?
Probably just bugging them. No, calling them every week, making sure that they're taken care of. I mean, at that point I was just offering, you know, what exactly are you looking for so I can keep an eye out. And then so anything that looked like that, I was sending their way and they were still getting those check-in calls from me. Have you seen anything on your own? Drove past any signs, any questions I can answer for you?
Yep.
So when you're that person that's constantly offering service, you're going to be the first person that they think of. I'm calling them, leaving voicemails, texts. I make it easy on them. So they're like, oh yeah, he did text me. I remember that kid.
Dude, and that's a big deal because I'll talk to a lot of people, whether they're new or experienced, where they've got this fear. They've got this limiting belief of I'm bugging people.
Sure.
I don't want to be that guy or that gal, you know, the telemarketer. And it sounds like you did it in a way to where you're building a relationship, you're adding value, you're building connection.
Sure.
You're not just trying to pitch them all the time, which is really important. But also you did it. And that's the cool thing is when I'll get to talk with a lot of people and they'll be, man, I'm like struggling to do this and do that. And even though we have nothing to do with cold calling, that's one of the things I tell them to do. If they don't have a budget, if they don't have, you know, if they're not going to execute what we do, like just pick up the phone and call people. And they just get baffled by it. They're just going like, I need to call somebody? Like, what do I say and what do I do? And now let's fast forward to now. Over that first year, you did a lot of cold calling. You did online leads. What were you doing on Facebook that first year?
Basically, I would get permission. I didn't have a lot of listings myself. So I would get permission from a broker to, you know, advertise their listing and just route it to my website.
Cool.
And that had a force registry. So if they clicked on it, they would force register. I'd have another phone number to call.
Yep. Cool. And then you just keep calling, texting until it works.
The system is basically find out what they want and find out what their needs are. And that way you have a reason to call them.
Sounds simple.
Yeah, it is.
I love it. I love it. So now, second year, you added a team member. Was it just you and one team member?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Was there anything else you changed the second year to triple the revenue?
What was working the first year? I quit doing open houses.
Okay.
But what was working the first year was, you know, the majority of it was coming from those online leads.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I probably tripled that.
Okay.
You know, because I had virtually no expenses that first year and did so well. So I just, you know, doubled down.
Mm-hmm.
Identified where most of the money was coming from, doubled down, and that just created a funnel, you know.
Cool. Cool. And dude, one of the exciting things, and I'm pumped to work with you more, is because it sounds like a lot of your revenue came from Zillow leads, right?
Yeah.
And that's something where a lot of people kind of shun Zillow and they're like, hey, I'm not going to, which rightfully so, because Zillow's even came out in the last week or so where he was interviewed by the Inman guy, essentially coming out and saying now that, hey, we aren't here to enable agents. And he used that word. Sure. It's like, we're not here to enable agents.
Things are changing.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
And their model's shifting to where they're purposefully saying, hey, we're actively trying now to cut agents and loan officers out of the transaction. Now, can they do that? I don't know. I mean, they're definitely an 800 pound gorilla. It's almost impossible to get a local MLS to not send properties to Zillow now.
Sure.
But there's a lot of advantages local agents have over Zillow. A lot of properties take a while to get to Zillow. Sometimes they get sold before they ever even make it there, which is a big advantage a lot of agents have. But one thing I'm pumped about for you, man, and then we'll kind of shift into this part of it, is you found that those online leads work really well, right? Yeah. Someone's motivated, they make some Google searches, they find it. It just so happens to be that Zillow has done a good job controlling the conversation online. Uh-huh. And if agents, this is kind of our premise, if agents can go, cool, well, it's going to be hard to compete with Zillow at the city level, at the sell your house, or, you know, Roseburg Homes for Sale. It's going to be really hard to unseat Google for that, or Zillow for that one, or Realtor for that one. But you can do it at the niches. You can do it at the Melrose, the, you know, the Garden Valley, the Looking Glass, the Sutherland, the types of properties. And that's where you're really going to win. So what are you doing now moving forward? So you dove in with Carrot. You're still doing a lot of the things, if not all the things you're doing before that make it successful.
Yep.
Why are you now adding the strategy that we're starting to deploy, and what kind of results are you starting to see on the investment side?
That's exactly why.
Yeah.
I mean, because I know that nothing will last forever, you know, but there will always be some sort of Zillow or something that, you know, as long as you're on top of it and you're taking advantage of that, and you have the processes in place to convert, that you'll be good. And so I was watching a lot of Carrot stuff, and I'm like, all right, well, now I need to actually start making the transition and start doing that so I can be an early adopter and have that voice, you know, for whenever things do change.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can't get too heavily dependent on anything.
Yep.
Now, what I have found is just about, you can make just about anything work.
Yeah.
You put a little bit of money in and it spits people out. And I mean, it's immediate.
Yep. And one thing I want everyone to listen to here is Anthony wasn't just talking about how to get leads. Okay. He was saying, I got leads, but then I had a really great follow-up and conversion process. And that's where a lot of people get stuck. Dude, in a competitive market, people are always trying to pile more in the front end. They're like, hey, I just need to get more leads. I need to get more leads. And that might be the case, but usually what we tell people is like, what are you doing with your current ones?
Yeah.
And usually they'll call the person once, whether they're an agent or an investor, they'll call them once. You know, here's an example. There's both clients of ours and a lot of people who aren't clients of ours where they're going, man, my Google PPC isn't working like it was 2 years ago.
Sure.
You know, it's rather than $120 leads, now it's $400 leads, like all this kind of stuff. That's random numbers. But, and then in our lead to close ratio went down, and then I start to dive into things, go, well, your lead volume is still there. Did your profits grow by about that? Yeah. Like our profit margin's higher. Okay, cool. So that's not a big deal because your profit margin's kind of growing with your lead cost. But then I go, have you changed your follow-up? Like, have you been building credibility on your website? So when they're comparing you versus 2, 3, 4 other agents, or you versus 2, 3, 4 other buyers, or both, which a lot of people are comparing both now, do you stand out? Are you the trusted, credible expert? And then last is, most people aren't even picking up the phone, calling people immediately when a lead comes in, or answering phone calls live. They call them back in 4 hours, or they call them back the next day. Mm-hmm. And by that time, the person's already gone back to Google, looked at another agent's site, and then that person followed up really well, which is probably Anthony. And then Anthony's working with them now. And now they're not going to be bugged by this other person. And follow up's so big. And you've been nailing that.
And that's very, very true. Like I just said, I just turned 24 on Monday.
Yep.
That was like the first 3-day weekend that I've taken off all year.
Yeah.
And whenever I got back, I'm like, well, missed out on 10 grand. You know, because there's people that had called in, and you find out on Monday, oh, we ended up talking to somebody else.
Oh, gotcha.
So you got to be prepared for that kind of thing. And we've also been like in a transition of hiring and been a couple weeks behind. Yep. And you know, you think you're bugging someone by calling them every week or two, but no, it's sad whenever you go through the last 20 leads and you find out two of them already bought a house. And you're like, we were just talking last week, you know? So it's a huge deal.
Cool. Dude, so let's kind of transition over to the strategy moving forward now. And you're here in Roseburg. We're going to be working together on some stuff as far as guiding you on this stuff. And I think you're going to crush it because number one, I mean, you don't have to be this charismatic person to be on video. You just have to be an expert. Now, I think you're going to be able to do both, which is going to be really cool and set you out there. But that's one thing, guys. A lot of people get stuck on, well, shoot, what am I going to do videos on? What am I going to do content on? I want to kind of toss it over your way now and like, let's flip the tables. And this is kind of your chance if you have any questions or if you want to like even dig in on some of the stuff. What are some of the question marks you still have around, cool, what are my next steps? What do I do to really get the results here in a bigger way? Do you have any that are popping up in your mind?
Well, I think a big thing is just implementing them. I mean, because the information's out there. You guys put it out there what you should be doing. I mean, I'm sure you could narrow it down to what subjects would make the most sense to build a page around or make a video on. And then, like we've talked about a little bit, really just picking a niche. You know, you gotta niche down if you want to be able to beat those Zillows and Realtor.com. But the big part is just writing the content, committing to having someone film it, or you know, you filming it yourself, and you know, it's not overly complicated, but it does take time, and and it's a commitment.
Dude, the filming part of it, I do this all the time. I film, Brady and I filmed, how many videos we filmed today, Brady? Like 15 videos probably today. It was a lot.
And, at least 15.
And most of them were on my cell phone. Like we've got all the fancy cameras here. Most of them were on my cell phone.
That's funny.
And that's something that I'd really challenge everyone listening to this to do is you can always graduate to the fancier equipment later. Kind of what I always like to say is do what you will actually do first.
Sure.
And then once you get in that pattern, then you upgrade to the fancy cameras. And so everyone listening to this, I suggest everyone start to do video posts, you know, like film the 3 to 5 minute videos. Use your darn cell phone to do those next time you're out at one of the properties that in a niche you want to focus more on. Just take the darn cell phone out, man, and just start doing that 3 to 5 minute video. Hey, this is Anthony with da 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 da, and I'm actually out here at a home in Melrose or at a horse property or like whatever it is. Walk them through it. Get the darn thing uploaded to YouTube, man. Title it right. We can help guide you on that and get it in video posts.
Sure.
So let's go to the investment side, man. So you're here at Carrot Camp, and there were mostly investors, there were wholesalers, flippers. There were several who were both agents and investors, Tyler Ford, John. What are you starting to do on the investment side of things? Because I know shortly after that, you launched a campaign. We'll talk about that probably here in a bit. You closed your first wholesale deal in Roseburg, which even our other clients are saying, oh, it's really hard. It's a small market. And Anthony pulls it out in like a month because he executed the plan. But what are you wanting to do on the investment side of things? And why do you think it's important for agents to be doing both?
Well, especially speaking to agents, we've all had listings that don't have a real motivated seller behind them. I mean, and there's no point in it, especially me. I spend a lot of online marketing and everything else, you know, to get that going. You know, you listen to podcasts, you listen to these investor guys that, you know, nine out of 10 of the people we talk to end up, you know, needing market value. And I'm like, okay, well, that's 9 out of 10 are listings and I can buy the 10th, you know? So that's been huge. We started implementing some of the, like going down the courthouse and getting probate records and doing some of the things that investors do. And I always try to sell them on the listing first, not only because I think that that's, you know, the right thing to do in most cases. They can make more money that way. And I explain it to them.
Bo Hollis right there, fellow Carrot Camper.
That's funny. It's just a good way of getting motivated sellers, you know, and I first always introduce it. I almost try to talk them into listing first, you know, because I want to make sure that nobody feels like I was trying to take advantage of them. You know, I 100%. Want, and I show them the numbers. I mean, and the guys are so appreciative, you know, you know, just have a couple sit down in a tough situation and be like, you know what? Well, I see you're going to make 25 grand here, but it's almost worth the 25 grand difference for us to, you know, just let you handle it. And we have a sure date that everything's going to close. Yep. And, you know, and I've only done it a couple times now because, again, 9 out of 10 of them are just going to turn into listings.
Yep.
But we're selling those listings too because those people are actually motivated and want to sell.
And, so, dude, part of it too is I think when you give people two options, right? If you, I don't remember the name of this concept, but people always want an option. And my philosophy is you should always give them an option within your ecosystem.
Sure.
And what happens with most agents and investors on both sides of it is they give them – investors might give them two or three options as far as like, hey, this is me making more of an offer and then you carrying – like they might have different terms in there, right? But still it's only one real option. It's like I'm going to buy the property from you.
Sure.
And most agents are going in with one option. I'm going to list it and – it's the standard commission. It's the standard thing. But when you can give them two options at the same company, now they get to compare two vastly different things with one person, one company. They don't feel the need oftentimes to then go look elsewhere.
I've noticed that.
Which is a big deal, right?
Yeah.
So one thing I want to kind of tackle a little bit, I saw this in a Facebook thread this last week, and everything's true in Facebook threads, right? So, but I saw this in a Facebook thread, and I think it's the epitome of, once again, there's limiting beliefs on both sides of the coin. And this is where I've been talking about a lot, where I really feel agents should be investors or work with them tightly, and investors should be agents or work with them tightly. Mm-hmm. Now, every one of them isn't going to be the other. So I think there needs to be a lot of collaboration as the industry starts to squeeze together and become one over the next 10 to 20 years. But one limiting belief mindset that I've had is a lot of agents are kind of poo-pooing wholesalers, flippers, and or the iBuyers going, well, shoot, you know, they're charging way more than we're charging. Do they know that? And I think I'd love to see agents adopt the mindset that there's multiple benefits and reasons why someone would sell. And it's not always what's the most money that they're going to get in their pocket.
Sure.
And like what you had mentioned before, there's multiple people that you've worked with where maybe – listing it would get them the most in their pocket, but it'd be the least convenient for them.
Sure.
They don't have the time. They don't have the money maybe to put in to repair it to even get it to sale ready.
That's a huge thing too.
So what do you see? Do you talk with other agents who have that mindset going, dude, like, why are you doing that? You're putting less money in your pocket, and they think it's an ethical issue. I think it's the opposite.
Well, I think this is a huge takeaway anyway, but once we started doing this and I hired someone full-time to just cold call and everything, I started getting calls from agents being like, you talk to someone I know, and what is it that you're doing? You know, you're lying to these people. And I'm like, no, I'll buy it if it's for the right price, you know? But anyway, people just don't really understand. And I think if you're doing things right, you're going to get that kind of thing. So, I mean, we experienced a lot of that. But you can do it right and you can do it wrong. And I think these people, of course, I have built credibility. So I send them my 50 reviews that I have online before I even go out there. So they know that I'm a real guy selling houses. But they've also, you know, either landed on my Carrot website or we cold called them or whatever and sent them those things. So they have all the materials. They're familiar with me by the time I get out there. And then they just appreciate it. You know, they appreciate the honesty and the fact that I'm like, this is how much I'm going to make, you know, and this is how much I'm going to make over here. It doesn't matter to me. I think you should do this because that's what's going to put the most money in your pocket.
Yep.
And they're like, well, then I have to clean out all this trash. I have to, you know, I don't have the money to go do all these dump runs and whatever else. Plus I'm on a tight time frame or I'm going to lose the house in, you know, 60 days. And I'm like, well, we have a little bit extra time. They're like, yeah, but that's going to stress me out. You know, we'd rather just take a lesser and know it's going to close. And so that's been my experience.
Dude, I want more and more real estate agents to listen to this part of it because the ones who don't, man, like the ones who don't are the ones who are going to get lost in the shuffle in the next 5 to 10 years.
Sure.
It's the ones who think that the only ethical and honest way to help a seller is to go through the MLS to list the thing and put the most in their pocket. But at the same turn, they're the same people going down the road and buying a car and then trading their car into the car lot, right? It's the same thing where you know that you could probably sell it on Craigslist or whatever for more money, but you don't want to because it's less hassle. It's like, well, it looked like a fair price. I know I could get some more money, but they're going to take it right now. And I don't have to go back and vacuum it. And I don't have to like that little dent that's on the thing. I don't have to worry about that. I don't have to get it detailed. I don't have to do the Craigslist app. I don't have to do any of that stuff. I can just like give it to them that two or three grand, whatever. I'll make it up later. I'm good. It's like I want more.
That's a very good way to put it too.
It is. Like,
everybody should be able to relate to that.
It's the same thing. So I want more. It's just bigger dollars is all. And also it's what they perceive as a threat to their business model, right? They're going every property that gets bought by an investor is one less property that gets sold by an agent. But that's where I want people to shift is, guys, you need to think about solving the problem for the seller. And it's not always fitting. If everything has to fit into a box of, it's got to look like an MLS listing, or over here on the wholesale side, it's got to look like a 65% or 70% of value offer, then over the next 10 years, you're going to be suffering a lot. But if you look at everything going cool, I want to figure out what their true motivations are. I want to figure out what their pains are, where they want to go. I want to figure out what their goals are, and I'm going to give them the two best options and let them choose. Dude, that's serving people. Like, that's being a legit consultant and actually serving them. Giving them one option and saying, hey, this is my way or the highway, and thinking the other way is the wrong way. It's like, man, that's not being a servant. Sure. That's not being a consultant. So I want agents to start to adopt that mindset like Anthony has and like so many other agents and investors have. And if you don't, I think you're going to end up looking back one day in 5 years, 10 years, or 2 years, or whatever it is, and wondering why more and more of your business is kind of getting shifted over. So just be a really good consultant. Solve the seller's problem. Solve the buyer's problem, whether it's MLS or whether it's buying the property.
And you hear more and more about downturn in market and mm-hmm. those kind of things. And I think by implementing this in to the business is another hedge against that.
Yep.
You know, because motivated sellers are what keep everything moving.
Mm-hmm. So. Dudes, I want to ask you this question. You know a lot of agents in town. Uh-huh. And I don't know. Hopefully this comes across the right way. how many or what percentage of agents do you feel are actually building financial freedom by doing what they're doing, running their business the way that they are, versus ones who are truly building an asset, building passive cash flow, really doing that? I think most of them are just like, they're treading on commissions.
Yeah, I mean, for the majority of them, I think that that's mm-hmm. a major concern of 98% of people in our industry,
yep.
you know, that don't have a retirement and everything. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't really have a retirement, but my plan is to sock it all into real estate. Hopefully yep. that, you know, hopefully yep. that works, but it's worked for plenty of people before me. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the way to do it.
I love it. And you as an agent, you're poised to do that, right? Because sure. you're working with a lot of people mm-hmm. and every now and then it might make sense to buy the darn property as long as you're paying that client a fair price. It works for them. They're pumped about it. You're mm-hmm. disclosing everything. Like you said, hey, I'm an agent yeah. and I can also buy it, and here's both sides and mm-hmm. everything's above board. It works. I love sure. it. So dude, I want to kind of focus in on, you wholesaled that one deal, uh-huh. right? So you found a local buyer that wanted the property. Was it a rental property they were wanting it for or what?
Yeah. We had talked on Bigger Pockets before, but we didn't know each other from that. Uh-huh. But yeah, I just made a Craigslist posting about it, you know. Cool. It was actually, I probably would have fixed and flipped it, mm-hmm. but I already had one going, and this one was in North Bend.
Oh, cool.
However that happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a couple hours away from me, and with me being new to this and already mm-hmm. have one going on, you know, plus funds would probably be tapped if I had two of them going. So we just decided, well, let's give this a shot. We'll close cool. on it if we have to, mm-hmm. but let's give this wholesale thing a try. Yeah. And really, I'm so glad I did. I mean, that guy will probably make a good amount of money too.
Yeah.
But we made a $13,000 assignment. You mm-hmm. know, that's for our area, our average price point is 250, you know, so you can think average commission's around $7,000 or something. Yep. So that was a good sale for us either way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dude, I was so pumped to get that IG message from
yeah.
you. I don't remember the exact words of it. You're like,
it worked.
I guess this wholesaling thing's real
yeah.
or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's
which was funny. And so with that one came through your Carrot side. It sounded like uh-huh. that was a PPC lead, right?
Yep.
Okay. Cool. Yep. So we set up that campaign. We have a service, y'all. I think it's called AdWords Quick Start or something like that. Go to our marketplace. But what he did, guys, we're in a small town. And people argue against, well, it's not going to work in a small town, or it's way too competitive in this big town. But we're in a very small town, 25,000 people. Anthony launched a pay-per-click campaign. Do you remember the numbers from that? How much did it cost you in clicks before you got that deal?
Oh, gosh, not very much. I mean, I've only been doing it for a couple months, but I mm-hmm. think the bill ends up being somewhere around $100-$150.
Really?
I mean, next to nothing. I mean, we don't get a whole lot of clicks. So
Yeah. And that's the cool thing, guys. Like, I'll talk about it on the investor side a lot, but this works for the agent side too, where people say, hey, can this work in a small market? And at the end of it can at the end of the day, but like Anthony said, it's lower volume. Okay. Who knows? It might be another 3 months before you get a deal like that, or 6 months. I don't know what it's going to be. It may have just been this perfect time when you have that client come in there, click it.
Well, we did put another one under contract on Tuesday.
There's another one through PPC.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'll eat my words there in a good way, though.
Don't tell anybody. I don't want anybody else coming into my market.
That's right. No, guys, but it works. So in a smaller market, the cool thing is your budgets are smaller, okay? In a bigger market, your budgets are going to be bigger, but then you have to just look at there's going to be a lot more volume in that market. But in small markets, guys, don't hire a PPC firm to manage it. Okay, that's a big year. You're going to be paying way more money to that PPC management firm in actual clicks, like Anthony mm-hmm. talked about there. Another client of ours in Eugene, Robert Grand, he was going through almost getting ready to pay $7,000 to a PPC agency.
Wow.
And he's like, hey, I signed the contract. I'm like, send the money tomorrow. And I'm going, oh, dude, don't do that. Like, not in Eugene. Eugene's sure. way bigger than Roseburg, but not in Eugene. I said, if this doesn't work, then go hire someone.
Sure.
And he did the same thing. Like, paid us to set up the AdWords account, uh-huh. gave him a little tutorial on it, and he locked one down, $52,000 profit in Oak Ridge, actually.
Sure.
Which is crazy.
I've literally done zero. I want to make that clear. Like, yeah. I didn't go in there and mess with it or anything. I looked at it. And I'm like, I don't understand this. Closed it. I've left it alone.
Yeah, you're like, that looks interesting. But, all but that
things
stuff
are still
in
coming
there.
Through. So
cool. I like it. Awesome, man. So what are your plans moving forward? What are your plans next 12 months? Let's go on the agent side and on the investment side. What do you hope to do?
Well, I want to get more units, mm-hmm. more passive income. It's a little bit harder on the West Coast. You know, it's not really a cash flow market. Mm-hmm. But there's one that we're keeping.
Cool.
So. I mean, it'll happen, I guess, you know, whether that's one in five of them or whatever, I don't know, but mm-hmm. that's the end goal. And then other than that is building the team. And we didn't really talk about this much, but my team structure has been a lot different, you know, cause most teams have that high turnover. I also feel like, you know, I work on a 70% plus, you know, profit margin. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of the teams don't. And so I've been able to build that to where it stayed that way, even though I was, you know, building the team rather than having these buyer's agents that are doing a 50-50 split. They last in the market for 3 to 6 months and then you have to replace them. So instead,
what's your team look like right now?
Well, besides the fact that we lost one, which was working awesome. It was proof of concept. And now mm-hmm. I know we can double down on that. And that's really the cool thing about it. But a salaried agent, mm-hmm. you know, a salaried agent that they want that consistency. They still get a good bonus on it. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, a 5-10% bonus on it rather than a 50. But they know they're going to be able to afford their rent, afford their mortgage every month. And, you know, they're only focusing. I have another team member that writes all of our offers. Mm. He handles all the transaction management.
Cool.
So for someone who's like a bubbly person that just likes talking with people and making friends, mm-hmm. and all they have to do is talk to people on the phone and show houses.
Yep.
Like that's the perfect position. They're never going
to
want
to
leave.
They don't have to worry about marketing. They don't have to worry about the closing part of it.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Exactly. And there's a potential to make great money. Hmm. And you know, if I was able to close 5+ deals a month by myself, only making phone calls for 2 hours a day, what could someone do that's sitting there for 4 or 8 hours? They don't have to deal with all the paperwork and stuff like I did. There's no reason why they couldn't double what I was doing.
I love it.
That was great proof of concept to plug someone into that was licensed, and she did very, very well.
Cool. One thing I'm pumped about, man, like we talked about the agent and investor, kind of the philosophies that we'd love to see people shifting. One thing that you guys have done is you kind of went off on your own as your own brokerage now.
Yeah.
What forced that decision? Because you guys were with a larger brokerage and then you went over to your own.
The big thing was is that they were relatively new because, like I said, they started in – there was a Keller Williams in a town an hour away. Mm-hmm. So they finally opened up one here. I had been working from my home office, my spare bedroom, that whole time.
Yep.
You know, even as we grew, we were 4 people out of my spare bedroom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was awesome. It was the beginning of the year that we had our office built and moved into that. So anyway, we didn't have office space offered by them, and it took 1 to 2 weeks for us to get our paychecks, and that was the only time that they saw us. Was whenever I went in there to pick up. There wasn't anything they were offering for you know, a 36% split, you know, after everything. It just so happened that my operations manager was getting his principal broker's license. You know, I'd still only been in, you know, in it for a year or whatever, so I couldn't get it. But he was doing that, and I was like, hey, I really want to do this investment thing. I'm not sure how that's going to work with the corporate KW, you know, and what they have to, what they're going to have to do. Why don't we just like build out an office, have it be the brokerage and the investment company, and we'll be the only investment company in town. Like, where else can you just walk in and get an offer? You know, we would be the only ones.
Yeah.
So that's what we decided to do. I mean, the savings and in the splits, you know, I don't know how much we would have made over that 300,000, you know, but we didn't have to pay any of that out. That's going to more than probably pay for another employee plus the lease on the building and everything else.
Dude, we're going to see a lot more of that too. Cause as you see, in the spot of the market, we are with a lot of competition cause we're at the top of the market or some people saying that over it or right before it depends. But then also the tech stuff coming in, you know, all the disruptions happening with your open door OfferPad, Zillow.
Sure.
And then even KW came in with their partnership with OfferPad recently.
Yep.
And then also KW Command, which they say is going to be like this game changing thing. one thing that I want people to look at is you'll see Compass, you see Big Block Realty down in California crushing it, growing massively. You see EXP growing. And we know a good friend of mine, local agents that moved from a bigger brokerage to EXP just recently. And it's because of splits. It's because everyone's starting to get their commissions compressed a little bit, just because of the stage that we are in the market. And when your commissions are compressed from your clients, like where clients are trying to come in and negotiate commissions, and it moves from a standard of 3 to some agents reporting, hey, our new is like 2.5. You know, like we're struggling to keep 2.5 now. Some people are saying that. Then it makes it a lot more attractive to go, man, I'm getting pressed here. I'm also getting pressed with the brokerage. Mm. I'm going to go find this over here that immediately gives me a raise.
Sure.
I think we're just going to see a lot more of that, you know, where people start to get away from the bigger brokerages. And
it's a pyramid scheme.
Yeah,
no, and it's finally starting to break down a little bit, I think.
Exactly. And then even KW, I mean, I think I really admire Jay Papasan. Jay Papasan's coming onto our podcast not too long.
That's awesome.
And I love Gary Keller's book. Sure. I think the way they run their business is awesome. They're innovators. But the KW Command thing, I think it looks like a great tool. But there's one thing I want people to realize and recognize is there's agents coming in going, man, like, cool, how are you going to compete? Like telling us, like, how are you guys going to compete against KW Command now? I'm going, it's a great tool. Like the follow-up and all the automation, it's killer. Like we're never going to build that.
Sure.
How are you going to compete against the 300 other KW agents in Dallas if you all have the same exact KW Command tool? Like, how are you going to stand out? How do you stand out is the key. And it's the input into the tool. It's the input in, are you building authority? Are you creating content and building authority? That's what's going to help you win. The tool of KW Command or tools like that, or a fancy IDX system that does this, only amplifies your input, only amplifies the authority that you're creating.
Sure.
And so that's one thing I want agents to listen to is look at all these fancy tools, but if you're not creating authority, if you're not getting out there and creating content, mm-hmm. if you're not starting to get out there and leverage the internet where your best clients are coming from, mm-hmm. every tool you have after that, man, is just amplifying the input that you put in there.
And it's an easy button. I mean, everybody, all they got to do is sign up for KW and they have this tool. I mean, then what's the differentiating factor?
There's not. The only differentiating factor is a different picture, different phone number, different email address
sure.
on there. And then after everything else from there is like, oh, shoot. I guess I still have to stand out. And sure. so that's why we're going all in on that. We're like, we're just going to be the best at helping people with what we think is the biggest issue now. The biggest issue is how do we go hyper-local and win at being authorities and help you control Google, which is the same way that Zillow won. And that's what I'm pumped to see you as you grow this next 6 months, this next year, implement that, man. I'm pumped to see how you grow on the investment side. And I hope everyone that's listening to this can kind of take some cues from what Anthony's doing, where he's built an amazing business on the agent side. He's leveraged starting to build a team. Buying your time back is what you're starting to do now.
Oh yeah.
And then you're doing the investment side of things so you can truly serve your clients better rather than everything fitting into the MLS box. But then also you're building authority, and that's something I'm pumped about. So now let's finish with this. One thing I always say that most entrepreneurs start businesses because of is 4 things: freedom, flexibility, growing those finances, and making an impact. Many times we do 1 or 2, but not all 4. My previous businesses gave me the finances, but I didn't have the freedom, didn't have the flexibility, and I wasn't making an impact because of that. Sure. This one now I've got all 4. Right now, you're making great finances. You just took your first 3-day weekend, which I want to see you take more of those, man.
Eventually.
And you know, when you're in that young hustle phase as well, like you like to work 5, 6, 7 days a week because it's enjoying. Yeah, you love it in that early phase, but eventually, for me anyway, I had to kind of make a shift. Is there anything that you want to shift in kind of that work schedule, that work life side of things, buying back time? What do you want to kind of do moving forward?
Definitely. And I think I'm probably 2 hires away from doing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then again, it's the longevity, you know, not putting someone in there that's going to be dependent on commissions. But trying to figure that out, that was huge. If she didn't have the personal things going on, that would have been a forever thing. And she was always getting better, you know? And I think there's a lot more people that are like, wow, that's a cool model. Yep. You know, like I can get on board with that.
Yep.
Plus they're just doing their specific strengths, you know? And so that's what we're going for. We're doing interviews every day. It's tiring me out, but it's like my main priority right now.
Cool. And dude, you're going to see a lot more. Everyone's going to see a lot more in the next year or 2, a lot more opportunities to find great people like that. Because as the market kind of tightens up a little bit, you're going to see the agents who didn't figure out the marketing side of it well, but they have the they have the bubbly side of it. They like to take people around. Mm. You're going to see a lot more of them go, oh, shoot, I might want to give up this real estate thing because I'm not able to make the finances work because houses aren't selling as fast anymore. And you know, all that happens when a market starts to soften. And so you're going to start to be able to see more of those opportunities, find great people like that, which can be cool.
Sure.
So, guys, we're going to wrap it with this, but what I want you guys to do if you're an agent or an investor is look at the other side, put, you know, like they say, walk a mile in the other person's shoes and look at ways you can collaborate with both sides. Okay. Look at ways you can collaborate. And also if you're not delivering, the full solution to a seller or buyer, I think that's not really serving them well. If you're not delivering how their transaction will be if it's listed versus if you buy it directly, then you're not serving that client well. You're actually forcing them to go somewhere else to try to find a solution when I actually feel you can solve their solution better than anyone else if you make that choice. But Anthony, I'm proud of you, man. Can't wait to get to know you as we go. But more. Appreciate you coming to the Carrot Cast and
being
our first customer one in here ever. We should like have balloons going off in here and stuff. That'd be cool. But guys, we're gonna wrap this. Anthony, thanks, man. Good luck the rest of the year. And guys, go subscribe to the Carrot Cast on Apple Podcasts. Hit the subscribe button on YouTube. We're gonna have a lot more of this coming your way if you're real estate agents and investors, helping you crack through the clutter, helping you really win your market. And we have something called the Authority Building Challenge. If you go to carrot.com/challenge, carrot.com/challenge, we have a 30-day challenge we're launching each and every month now, where we're gonna be diving in and taking you by the hand everything I just talked about. What's the exact strategy and how to win in your market and build authority? How do you build out your website and your web pages to win and beat Zillow and crush Google? How do you build credibility and build trust? And then how do you start to build out that content marketing system, execute it and amplify it with social media? Just go to carrot.com/challenge. 30 days, we're going to help you get there. Talk soon.